Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Vatican honors a Caritas aid worker for her efforts to support the most needy people in North Korea. The Holy See's envoy to the United Nations speaks of the challenges facing the newly appointed Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. And Pope Benedict takes a look at the life of the man often called the 13th Apostle. Welcome to the programme. The Vatican has honoured a Swiss aid worker with one of its most prestigious awards in recognition of her tireless dedication to needy people in North Korea. Former Caritas worker Kathy Zellweger last week became a Dame of the Order of St. Gregory the Great, the highest honour that the Holy See bestows on laypeople for services to the church and to their local communities. Swiss-born Kathy Zellweger spent the past 28 years working with Caritas Hong Kong, and for more than a decade she's been the public face of Caritas aid programs in North Korea. One of the few Westerners to have travelled extensively inside the isolated communist country, she first began visiting Pyongyang in the mid-1990s, as reports of starving children began filtering out of the famine-hit nation.
Our program really started in summer 1995. That summer they had terrible floods and they asked the international community for assistance, and Caritas was one of them, and that's how it all started.
Take us back to your first visit to the country, the kind of impression you had when you first went inside the country.
Oh, in those days it was totally different. I mean, you really felt it was an isolated place and people would not look at you. They would avoid eye contact. You had no links, basically. It was just a totally different world. And that has all changed. It's now more relaxed. Of course, if you are a newcomer, it's still not relaxed. But for me, having the opportunity to compare over 10, 12 years makes a big difference. So I do see changes.
What would you say are Caritas' greatest achievement over this, well, more than a decade now?
Oh, I think we have saved thousands and thousands of lives by providing the much-needed food aid in the crisis years, 1995 to 1998. And even today, also the North Korean government is requesting development aid. I still believe there is a big need for humanitarian assistance. And we need to watch the situation very, very carefully and see what kind of humanitarian assistance we still can provide.
How difficult is it for you and other humanitarian aid workers to really be able to assess the needs of the people there? How easy is it to travel around outside the cities, for example?
There are still, of course, restrictions. You need travel permits. But in my case, once you have been given the travel permit, and if you have a good North Korean companion with you and you know perhaps the people on the ground in the counties or villages, you have established relationship and trust, then the difficulties are much, much less.
So in other words, the image that we have through the news stories that come out of difficulties with the government, once you get to a local level, you're saying that's quite different.
My experience is that at the local level, you're really welcomed and they appreciate the help. I mean, they appreciate our help at the top level, too. It's just that there is internally, are there some tensions about all these foreigners in the country? Not that there are that many, but still. So a lot is bargaining, negotiating. And I think that's one thing I had to learn in Asia, that you negotiate everything. And that takes time and patience.
What about the mentality of the average North Korean family today? How much are they aware of the international situation and the situation regarding their own country? How much access do they have to media now, for example?
I think the access to international news is still very limited. Also now, every Sunday evening, they have a 45 minutes TV program about international news, so at least that. But in the countryside or in the areas where the situation is still very difficult, I think for the average family, it's a struggle for survival. And you are concerned about how can I feed my children? Will they get schooling? What can I do if somebody falls ill? That has priority, and not thinking about, you know, bigger issues.
How much is health and education and these other, as you say, basics of life? How difficult is it still for people to get that in the poorer areas that you're visiting and looking after?
Healthcare is still in a very, very dismal state of affairs, and a lot needs to be done in that sector. WHO is helping a lot, UNICEF, and then some aid agencies like Caritas, but the needs are very big. In terms of upgrading the present system, upgrading hospitals, but also the training component comes in too. And that's a change from the last few years, that we are now able to do more capacity building projects. So there has definitely been a greater awareness that there is a need to learn in a variety of sectors. So that's again positive.
How much does the development of the country, do you think, help to stabilize the political situation?
That is a hard question, but I think with the changes, like with the establishment of markets, with people now receiving salaries instead of government handouts, the mindset of the people is changing.
Describe to us a little bit, if you can, life in the city right now in Pyongyang. You're saying there's a huge change even from just a decade ago.
What has changed is, for example, that there's more traffic, more cars, more bicycles. People are dressed more colourful. There are markets. Small-scale businesses have been established. Everybody, I think, now talks about costs and prices. This wasn't on before because people simply took what they received, and now they have to make ends meet. And that, of course, for many, I think, is also a problem. And I see that have and have nots are developing. And therefore, for Caritas, it is very important that we follow this trend and see how can we help those that are falling through the net, the sick, the poor, the marginalized, the excluded.
We're talking about the humanitarian situation. Of course, North Korea is largely in the news at the moment for the current nuclear tensions over its nuclear capacity. How much do you think can international pressure on the government help to resolve this current crisis?
Personally, I do not believe in pressure or sanctions because most of the time they hurt the wrong people. I do, however, believe in negotiations and in a constructive, non-threatening engagement.
And yet the six-party talks broke down quite some time ago, and it seems difficult to find a way through this current deadlock.
With the six-party talks, I felt probably North Korea felt threatened because, you know, there were more partners on the other side than on their side. And I think eventually a direct dialogue with the US has to happen. Maybe this threats with a nuclear test, perhaps that's also an outcry to say, can we not talk? Or do we have to take more drastic measurements?
What role does South Korea play in this? Because on the surface it would seem that perhaps the South Korea is most obvious negotiating partner to begin with, as a bridge between, if you like, the two sides.
Even with South Korea, the situation is still very, very complex, and there are still many, many hurdles to take. Also, South Korea is trying very hard to engage North Korea.
there are, of course, many families, aren't there, on both sides of the divide between North and South Korea, and the family reunification program at one time seemed to be bringing the two sides a little closer together.
That is still happening, that they have from time to time these family reunion gatherings, and I do think that is very, very important. But I also feel the younger generation in South Korea has a very different outlook, because for them it's not that close anymore. It's over 50 years. So it's no longer a topic which was discussed at the family table before, you know, relatives in the north. Because, you know, the clock is ticking. And those who still have relatives in the north, they are all in their 80s and plus.
What about the role of the church in South Korea? Traditionally, the Archbishop in Seoul is apostolic administrator also of North Korea. Is there any way that the church in the south can play a stronger role in trying to forge ties, in trying to ease tensions between the two countries?
There are different groups in the South Korea from the church who are trying to establish more in-depth links with North Korea. How far we have come, I don't know. We have very little information about the situation in the north. I still believe maybe among the group that goes to the Catholic Church in Pyongyang, the Changchun Church on Sunday, where it's only a prayer service because there is no priest. I do believe among the old people there might be some Christians, but it's hard to tell.
Is there any interest amongst younger people, for example, about religious faith of any kind, perhaps not just the Christian faith? Do you ever...
Very, very little. Only because when I'm there, I usually go to church on Sunday, so occasionally my North Korean companions would ask a few questions, why and what is this all about? Or they would listen in and, you know, join the service, but that's about it. Otherwise, it's hardly ever discussed. However, whenever I meet officials in the countryside, I always explain what Caritas is and what we stand for.
You say you've been working there for over a decade now. What really gives you hope in the country there when you're working amongst the people?
Well, I think at the end it is the people where you see that you can have an impact and you can help them to move forward or help them to help themselves. And sometimes we tend to forget that there are 22, 23 million North Koreans who want to just lead a simple, ordinary life like you and I. Because all we read is, you know, the political issues, the nuclear issues, whatever. But there are millions of people who have the same desires as we have.
Kathy Zellweger there, who's moving from her job as head of Caritas Hong Kong to Pyongyang, where she'll be running a humanitarian aid program for the Swiss government's Office on Development and Cooperation. Here in the Vatican on Wednesday, Pope Benedict greeted pilgrims and visitors gathered in a bright and sunny St. Peter's Square for his weekly general audience. Amongst the many groups from all over the world this week was the mayor of Rome, Walter Veltroni, accompanied by the family of the young woman killed in the train crash at a Rome underground station 1 week ago. In his catechesis in the different languages this week, Pope Benedict focused his words on the life of the man sometimes called the 13th Apostle, St. Paul. My colleague Charles Collins takes a closer look.
Pope Benedict started a new series of catechesis during his weekly general audience on Wednesday. Last week, the Holy Father finished his catechesis on the apostles of the church. On Wednesday, he looked at other important figures in early church history. Speaking in St. Peter's Square, he began his new series with St. Paul, whom he pointed out is often referred to as the 13th Apostle.
Paul was a devout follower of the law, whose initial hostility to the gospel suddenly melted when he encountered the risen Lord on the road to Damascus. his own accounts of this dramatic conversion speak not only about his vision of Jesus, but also his call to be an apostle. From that moment on, Paul's life was completely dedicated to the service of Christ.
The Holy Father said that Paul teaches us to make Christ the center of our lives and to see all things in the light of God's universal love.
Paul's zeal for the gospel led him to preach the name of Jesus in Asia and in Europe, and to face countless trials with courage and undying love for the Lord. Truly, the love of Christ impelled him, even to his death as a martyr here in Rome. So the prayers of St. Paul, may we respond joyfully to his challenge to become imitators of me as I am of Christ.
After the catechesis, the Holy Father greeted pilgrims in various languages, including English.
I am pleased to greet the many English-speaking pilgrims present, especially those from England, Ireland, Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, India, Indonesia, Japan, and the United States of America. My special greetings go to the pilgrims from the dioceses of Cheyenne and Wheeling, Charleston, led by their bishops. I also greet the priests taking part in the Institute of Continuing Theological Education of the Pontifical North American College. I thank the Holy Rosary School Choir from Gauteng, South Africa, for the praise of God in song. Upon all of you, I cordially invoke an abundance of joy and peace in the Lord. Sit nomen Domini benedictum.
Ex omne tus quae seculum.
Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini.
Qui feci celum et terra.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
And my thanks there to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. And finally, on October the 24th, 1945, the United Nations Charter came into force, marking the start of a new era in international relations. Ever since then, the date has been celebrated as United Nations Day in countries throughout the world, where meetings, debates, exhibits examine the achievements and goals of the world body. Well, 61 years on, the United Nations is currently undergoing major reforms amid criticisms of corruption and inability to deal effectively with everything from civil wars to nuclear proliferation. This week, the outgoing Secretary-General Kofi Annan spoke of major achievements of the past decade, together with a realistic assessment of the most serious problems still facing our world. On the positive side, he said, debt relief has increased, many civil wars have ended, and the world is scaling up its response to the AIDS pandemic. Yet the gap between rich and poor countries continues to grow, he said, and very few countries are on track to reach the Millennium Development Goals on decent living conditions for all. Many people still face atrocities and repression. The nuclear question requires urgent attention, while terrorism and the reaction to it are spreading fear and suspicion. As Annan prepares to hand over leadership of the United Nations to his successor, South Korean Foreign and Trade Minister Ban Ki-moon, I spoke to the Vatican's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva, Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, and asked him what he sees as the biggest challenges facing the organisation today.
The new Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is a low-key person, but very serious and very committed. And I think he will do his own share of work in a, in a, in a fine way, he has to continue the process of reform of the United Nations. The last Secretary General, Kofi Annan, has supervised, for example, the change from the Commission to the Council of Human Rights. And that change has some shortcomings, even though it was heralded as the solution to all human rights problems. It's not, because the same countries that have political problems and human rights violation problems are sitting in the same council anyway. And there is a need to look at it in a more comprehensive and a more universal way, as representing not just the members of the council, but the whole body of the United Nations, all the countries whose expression at the end it is. So to continue in the journey of reform of the UN, there are some administrative issues that need to be addressed so that money is spent more effectively and certain bureaucratic provisions are improved. But I think there are two or three specific issues where a lot of energy has to be invested. One is to make this peacemaking, a peacekeeping force, a reality, to make it an effective tool for the international community in the preservation of peace. So that needs to be, it's been approved in principle, has to be refined, has to be funded adequately, and to have the personnel trained in such a way that there will be no more scandals of UN soldiers abusing little girls or little boys even. Second, I think a good look has to be taken at the Security Council. The Security Council is a column of the UN system. So to touch the Security Council, it can be a risky business, because alternatives so far have proven to be of little value. So how to improve the participation of big countries into the system of security and the peacekeeping mission of the UN without creating too much of an earthquake in the system, that we risk to destroy what we have without being able then to put back into place a structure that is equally effective or hopefully more effective. So this is the big challenge facing the discussion of reform of the Security Council. And so far, the whole debate has been paralyzed. But I think it will come back again. And we need to probably a qualitative jump to have enough imagination to come up with new formulas. So far, nobody has, even though there have been attempts to say this is a way or the other, this is another way. De facto, nothing has materialized. But this is one of the important challenges facing the new Secretary General. Then another one, I think, is again the question of development and poverty. There has been much effort to create in every single country a more coordinated UN team, so that all the different representatives of agencies will work in convergence of efforts to impact the countries in a more constructive way. I think we need to do more in that direction, not just at the country level, but also at the international level, to have the different agencies of the UN to be a little more coordinated, some kind of coherence approach to addressing the same problems from different angles, but knowing what everybody is doing and knowing what will be the end goal to be reached. So these are some of the issues that I think will come up.
And finally, of course, the Holy See has observer status there at the United Nations. Are there any ways that you feel perhaps the church can be a more forceful voice as the UN looks towards these reforms, to making a greater impact on particularly the countries at local level?
It's true that the Holy See is the only observer state at the UN, and sometimes this is not understood by the UN or by the NGOs that are working around the UN or by the state individual states, because it's a unique kind of legal juridical situation. The Holy See is a state; it's the only one not being a member, yet. There is a right for the Holy See to speak up at the UN and to participate in the activities of the UN and the negotiations of issues, to be present at conferences of the UN. The reason obviously given by the Holy See to explain its unique status is that it wants to remain above the fray and to be a little more neutral and to be able to say a word that has an impact at the moral level so that it can be accepted and reflected upon by everybody, independent of religious, political interests of the moment situations. What we can do probably to be more effective and to have a wider impact, although right now when the Holy See speaks, even though people are not in agreement, the different ambassadors, the different delegations listens very carefully, and they want to know exactly what the position of the Holy See is on a variety of concerns. But we need to probably to have stronger delegations in the UN so that we have sufficient professional competence to be able to address issues knowing exactly what we are expecting, but within a wider ethical framework that reflects the values of our Christian tradition, which are values that are not limited within the confines of the Catholic Church or of the Christian churches, but they are values that really, at the end, respond to the good of the human person and of the human community as a whole family under God that has created us all equal.
My thanks there to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English program of Vatican Radio. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. In the meantime, don't forget you can always find all our news and feature programs on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. Stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.